Never had you figured for a Doors fan.
I'm not really a Doors fan, but sure, I'd like to get into them.
You want to be a Doors fan, you can't just go buy any album. It's scientific.
Sure.
You gotta buy this. Waiting for the Sun. Listen to it every night around dusk for about a month.
Then what?
Who's playing bass?
No one.
No bass.
No bass?
That's right. The gypsies had no homes, the Doors had no bass. But don't let that scare you, my friend. Let that liberate you. Because when you're free-flying with the Doors, man, what do you need a safety net for?
TBTL.
How's it all going?
You asking me about my podcast?
Yes.
I'm still trying to figure it out.
It's so easy. All you do is point and click.
But how does it work?
All you need is a computer and a regular phone line.
What's the symbology there?
Symbology? I'm sure the word you were looking for was symbolism. What is the symbolism there?
Pretty scoop, scoop. Poop, poop.
And now I'm going to fill this silence with the words I'm saying right now.
Well, all right. Hello, good morning, and welcome, everybody, to a Tuesday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
This whole conversation bothers me.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Who is my daddy, and what does he do?
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill, in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City, a gorgeous and unusually gorgeous Tuesday morning here. Blue sky, sunshine, waves, white caps breaking out on Lake Whatcom, looking out over Squalicum Mountain. It's going to be a fun episode of the show, everybody.
California got sunshine.
It is episode 3080 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
Updates aplenty today, including my trip to a weightlifting gym yesterday and how that went.
Really? I'm trying to build my beef castle.
Also, a story that we talked about maybe a year ago, this French chef who sued the Michelin restaurant rating system because they said that he put cheddar in his souffle, and he was hurt by that. We have an update on that case, and just the whole conversation around the Michelin rating system and Yelp and these various services that are sort of make or break for businesses, some of them small, some of them big. We'll talk about that. Also, a South Korean chef has sued the Michelin Guide for putting him on the list. So we'll get into that. Plus, emails and V-mails. And this guy, longest-running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships, as Jay would say, he's got flow. He is Andrew.
An innocent champion of honesty.
Walsh, and he's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Luke. I just realized I ran out of pithy things to say at the beginning of the show. I think this is it. I think I have to pass the baton to somebody else. I got nothing.
I've got something. I've got something that's extremely relatable for the listeners. And it's, I think, I mean, that's what people love about the show, Andrew, is how relatable our lives are.
This is about first
class. With you,
class.
Like the garbage problems. And for me, it's that the pilots pee too much in first class.
Yeah.
So in keeping with that theme.
Oh, shit. Things are hard.
I'm very mad at my Sonos sound system here at Burbank Springs.
Oh, no. Has it turned on you?
It has, Andrew, or more the Sonos company. I got an email from them this morning. It just says, your system requires attention.
Uh-oh.
It's a very HAL sort of, I don't know, AI run amok quality to that email. And it says, end of software updates. It says, in May, the following products in your system will be classified as legacy and no longer receive software updates and new features. This will affect your listening experience. And it goes on to list 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the, this is where it gets relatable, 5 of the Sonos speakers I have in the house. As the listeners probably remember, there was a period of time where I was sort of managing my anxiety through buying Sonos speakers. This is an intersection of the price point dropping and me booking a few side gigs. And so I have a lot of those strewn about the house in various rooms and parts of the yard. But they are now, this is that planned obsolescence thing that you hear about. And it's completely pwned me when it comes to my audio playback situation with iTunes. And now it's they've come for Sonos. When they came for iTunes, I said nothing. That's not true. I said a lot. But anyway, now they've come for my Sonos. Legacy products were introduced between 2005 and 2011. And given the age of the technology, they do not have enough memory or processing power to sustain future innovation. Please note that because Sonos is a system, all products operate on the same software. So they're saying some of these speakers I have are so old that they're not going to be able to update anymore. I'm like, okay, fine. They all work. I'm fine living in this version of the Sonos verse. Then they say, if modern products remain connected to legacy products after May, they will also not receive software updates and new features. Over time, this is likely to disrupt access to services and overall functionality. So I can't just stay in the 2005 Sonos verse, because pretty soon the whole system is going to start crashing on me because I have quote-unquote legacy products. Is that some BS or what?
That is infuriating. That is absolutely infuriating. It's also ironic, given how much time we've spent on this show saying how much we hate updates and how we avoid them for certain things like iTunes. I actually haven't updated my iTunes in a really long time. However, to then say, like, you bought some, you know, you plunked
not
some
cheap
money down in these things.
Back in the day, man. You know, part of why I got into this, I probably didn't talk about it at the time, but I'm sure it's, you know, the statute of limitations has sort of expired.
Ooh, what?
We had a friend who was kind of going through some a personal transition, and they had a job at a high-end stereo store. Not the one in the stereo district where you live, Andrew, but over on the east side, but actually partnered with a company that was in your very neighborhood. And I literally plunked down well over $1,000 kind of to sort of help this guy out in a way. You know what I mean? This was before you could just buy him on Amazon and whatnot. You went into a high-end stereo store. They sold you a system. And I was kind of like, yeah, you know, this guy's going to get a commission. Let's try to. I was partially motivated by wanting to have these speakers and partially by, like, kind of doing a solid for a friend.
And then all you had to do is get three friends to buy speakers from you.
And yeah, then would you be interested in being in my downline?
Yeah.
You know, we didn't even get into that the other day when we were back in St. Paul. We were talking about how activated our fine tens of listeners are. And I thought we could probably do some sort of multi-level marketing. I mean, we could get into some sort of candle or
sure
Tupperware sort of, you know, line of goods and get the listeners selling them. I mean, we'd have a huge downline if we just got the listeners selling Tupperware for us.
What about TBTL branded Tupperware? I actually like that. I love Tupperware. I go into this antique mall not far from where I live in the Fremont neighborhood. It's probably called the Fremont Antique Mall in case you're trying to piece it all together. I like to kind of keep things a little mysterious on the show. You go in there and I love it because they have some older stuff from the 60s, maybe even from the 50s, but a lot of it is stuff from the 70s and 80s, which is stuff that I grew up with. And just walking around the houseware section and seeing all the, oh, I forgot we had this pitcher that we would keep lemonade in with this classic Tupperware button on the top that kind of helped seal in the flavor, whatever. Just all these little bits of Tupperware that my, you know, grandma or my family had, and just seeing these things just is like a time warp. I would love to hook myself up with some real Tupperware. I've said it on the show before because I've just got a bunch of that crappy, like, Gladware stuff that you use for
right,
a couple
sort
of years.
Semi-durable good.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you can kind of reuse it, but it ain't the stuff that we grew up with.
Yeah. Anyway, but I do want to
come back. I have bad news, though, by the way.
Yeah.
Some of that Tupperware is a legacy product. It will no longer.
Yeah.
Will no longer mesh with your newer Tupperware. So
that is
some need to upgrade.
Bullshit. Like, I just
are you
what
ready
other,
though? Are,
what other
Andrew,
world do we live in? Where it's like, hey, buy this car. I know that's a much higher ticket item, but like, buy this car. But by the way,
not much.
We're going to stop making wheels for it in tires
these speakers
for it in 5 years.
Were easily five times the cost of my first car.
Of course. Yeah, talking about a used car,
expensive speakers, and a shitty car. So that's kind of how that came together mathematically. But Andrew, are you ready for the good news?
Yeah.
I am eligible to save up to 30% on new products when I upgrade
to
the Sonos
trade-up
program.
Oh, you've really engendered loyalty in me, Sonos.
I'm eligible to buy more Sonos products now at a slightly reduced rate. It's like, whatever, I don't need to belabor this, but it's like, I would be fine with everything just being the way it is. But it's the fact that the newer stuff is going to stop working because of the older stuff that really grinds my gears. Like, it, this, I mean, I may write an angry letter over this.
Ooh, I like it. My dad, am I mistelling the story? I think my dad feels like he might be responsible for bringing back a soft rock station on Sirius Radio. No way. Wait, I must be.
I'm listening.
I think I'm embellishing that. I do know that my dad's got a satellite radio kind of hookup in his bathroom. So my parents live in a condo that they bought a long time ago. I'm going to say like 20 years ago or something. And the basement was unfinished when they bought it. And that was their big project. You've done this before, you know, so you know that feeling when it's you have a big empty space to play in.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was able to like design his perfect kind of downstairs. They've got a really nice sitting area, TV area, a little office that doubles as a guest room for me when I'm there. It's just like really nice. And because they designed it and basically, you know, built it or had people build it, it's everything that he wants. And also down there's a little exercise room and then a nice big bathroom that is specified to his wants and needs. And part of that was making sure that there was like kind of speakers installed in the ceiling that mm-hmm. would hook up Ooh. To his little Bose thing that also had satellite radio, which how do you get satellite radio in the basement? I don't know. I think it's a wiring trick. But point is, that all of that was really not necessary for the listener, but I just wanted to, when you have that feeling of like, I've created my little, I'm not going to say man cave because it's shared spaces, but like his area.
I can tell you've been really trying to dance around what's clearly a man cave.
But it's not though. Actually, I think, you know, like the sitting areas for him and Joyce. But anyway, point is, so he just had it all dialed in a way that I think a Luke Burbank could appreciate. There's one station that he really liked, and I believe it was some sort of a soft rock station on satellite radio, which, dude, I can associate with that more today than ever before in my life. Mm-hmm. Like, if they take away my Kixie, I will scream and cry about it forever. So I believe he wrote a letter or maybe called to complain. And I think it was one of those things where satellite radio, you know, some of those stations just kind of swap in and out. It's almost like spaces at a mall store sometimes, I realize. What did I fell in love with something when I had my satellite radio a couple of months ago. I loved some station, and then it just disappeared overnight. And it turns out it was like a pop-up station, essentially.
Right.
And anyway, so
don't toy with me, Sirius.
Yeah, so I think my dad called to complain about it, and eventually it came back. Now, my theory is that these things just rotate in and out, but, you know, we'll call it a win.
Yeah, it's I don't know, this is on the subject of Sirius, and I don't have any kind of power out to this story, but I was having some dinner last night, and I ended up chatting with a guy who was sitting near me, and he, you know, you and I both kind of do this weird thing, I think, sometimes where we dance around talking about what the job that we do is,
mm-hmm.
not because, I don't know, sometimes it's just, it's a weird job, and I have complicated feelings about it. It's like if a person is too excited about it, I feel strange, and if they're not excited about it at all, I also feel strange.
Yeah.
So sometimes I'm oddly coy about it, and he was sort of asking me about my work, and I sort of said, oh, I work in radio. What do you do in radio? Well, I work on a show, so maybe it'll just end mm-hmm. it there. Like, mm-hmm. I'm a gaffer on a radio show, which mm-hmm. would be a weird job, just taping things down and whatever. Mm-hmm. What kind of, I don't know what kind of gaffing would happen on a radio show, but
you're a best
I will
boy
say I,
for...
I best boy on a radio show. I'm a grip.
Yeah.
I do hair and makeup on a radio show.
Mm-hmm,
anyway,
mm-hmm.
I'll Tremendous usually say upside. I work on a radio. Yeah. And it just, but he was very curious. And I kind of had this building sense that when I told him, like, oh, I work for NPR, he was going to have this really strong reaction. And I mean, one of the jobs, obviously, is Wait, which is on NPR. Usually when I want to just like finally settle it, I say NPR because more people have heard of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm building up to a building and I go, oh, yeah, I work for NPR, and I'm waiting for this response from him. And he just goes, is that on Sirius? Are you on satellite radio? I was like, I mean, probably.
Yeah, it is, actually, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they rebroadcast it somewhere, but that was like, I then knew that it was not going to be, this was not going to be a situation where he was overly cowed by the information that I work for an NPR show. Oh, is that on satellite? Yeah, it's station 174. It's after Patriot Talk, and before you get to an audio scroll of the NASDAQ.
Speaking of Patriot talk, I think McMillan Men is going to be coming back right around the corner.
Oh, it is.
For people who have been waiting for that. More details on that as it shapes up. But in the next week or two, we should be dropping some of those little podcast nuggets on you. Ew.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, there's one thing, though. When I had satellite radio and I was flipping through things, I think you're going to be able to associate with this, although I can't really explain it. I would feel really bad listening to public radio. Like, I did not like the idea of listening to public radio on satellite. The one thing I kind of liked is there's a station called PRX Remix, and you actually kind of technically work for PRX now. Is that true?
I'm on that. That is literally a station I'm on because I have to record things for that. They play snippets of LiveWire interviews.
Yeah, and I love the idea as a concept. I'll back up here for 1 second. So PRX, which is – it's kind of hard to explain as an organization right now. They distribute shows. They produce shows. But they started off as – their main function was to be a place where producers, mostly independent radio producers, could find a second life for the stories that they created. So let's say you're hired by some public radio station in Boston. Let's say – BUR hires you to do a story. You sell it to them. It's great. It airs, but then now what? It could air, you know, for years. It's an evergreen story, but, you know, you're done with it. Well, you can put it up on PRX, and any station that wants to grab it can grab it and, you know, embed it in one of their shows if they want to. So PRX is basically this huge library of independent stories. And a long time ago, it started off as an online-only thing. They started a PRX stream. It's called Remix now, where somebody would kind of program these things and think a little bit about how one would go into the next. Or maybe they have an algorithm now where on satellite radio, you can just turn this on and just kind of listen to a constant stream of independent pieces, segments from good radio shows, also segments from Luke's radio shows. Mm-hmm. Why would I do that? Anyway, I think I like that. Like, I think that's a really cool way to hear interesting things you won't hear elsewhere. But to turn on the NPR station on satellite radio and just listen to one of the national shows makes me feel so disloyal to local public radio, no matter where I am. You know, I just feel like that. No, if I'm going to be listening to any kind of actual NPR programming, I should be listening to it on my local radio station.
While drinking coffee out of a mug.
Yes.
From that local station.
Yep. Yeah.
To fully show your support. Yeah, I back to Sonos for a minute. The audio system that I used to like, but now I'm in a death match with. One of the things you can load in there are my radio shows. Like, I have the Dan Le Batard show in there. I have Fresh Air in there. I have Us in there, which is weird because we're not on the radio. And what it'll do is it'll just find any radio station in America that's playing that show at that moment.
Oh, really?
So, yeah,
oh, cool.
It's pretty slick. Yeah, so like I listened to the Dan Le Batard show a lot on the Green Bay, Wisconsin station.
You hear the local ads and stuff?
Yes.
Love it. Love it.
It's so good.
It's great.
It's honestly like because if I wait a few hours, I can listen to the podcast with no commercials, but I actually enjoy listening to it on like an AM sports frequency in a random town to hear all of the local hot tub ads and whatnot.
Yes.
I just love that stuff.
And regarding public radio, I mentioned before that I don't like to listen to the public radio stream on satellite, but I don't have to be listening to my own public radio station. I just have to be listening to a public radio station. So I remember when I was in L.A. and we had started doing TBTL full time and I didn't have to wake up that early in the morning anymore. Sometimes I would miss Morning Edition or I'd want to hear an extra hour of Morning Edition. So I would listen to the Hawaii public radio station streaming that. And you just get – it's just so cool to hear – I loved listening. I listened to so much public radio when I was in St. Paul, way more than I do here at home, because it always seems like a new fun adventure to hear some other regional public radio station and how they do things.
Plus, you feel like less of a piece of shit because it's like 6 a.m. in Hawaii.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Like, I'm up and at 'em today, man.
Right, right.
It's 6 a.m. somewhere, yeah. And I'm putting on pants.
That's right. It's 6 a.m. somewhere is a possible show title.
Could that be our... If we ever get a morning show, could we call it It's 6 a.m. Somewhere?
That could be the companion to Dude, It's Noon, the morning news show for stoners.
Did you make that up? Or is that
We've
like
talked about it on the show before. I think it was my friend Tim's idea. It might have been Paul and Tim's idea. But yeah, to come up with a morning news show style program, but it's on at noon, and it's for stoners who are just like kind of rolling out of bed around noon.
We should go to break, but I'll just mention quickly. I was going to go see Joker, which I'm actually probably going to go see tonight.
Oh, is it playing at a second run? Cool.
Yeah, like the art house theater here, the Pickford. Actually, I think it's at the Limelight, but they're part of the same organization. I didn't see it when it came out. I know it's gotten really mixed reviews, but you know, I figure I ought to see it for the sake of being able to talk about it if it comes up. Plus, I do like Joaquin Phoenix a lot. Like, I find him to be interesting as an actor. But last night, I was finishing my dinner. I was explaining how Sirius Satellite Radio meshes with NPR to a Bellingham resident. And then I checked on my phone, and I realized there was actually a stand-up comedy show here in Bellingham, which has the worst name for a recurring stand-up comedy show. Remember, the city is Bellingham, Andrew, for a Daily Double. Can you guess at the worst name for a Bellingham-based regular comedy show?
Port Dogstown. No.
Yes. God, how did you get that?
What am I even riffing on? What's the name of your... What was the name of...
Dogs
the,
Afoot.
But what was the...
Oh, Dog did, Townsend.
Dog Townsend, yes.
Dog Townsend is where Rudy would go to dog daycare.
So Bellingham Comedy Club.
You'll never get it because show. It's such a stretch.
Okay.
It's such a stretch that, I mean, it's unfair.
Laughinghams. The Laughingham...
Wow. You're actually pretty close. It's called... Guffawingham. It's called the Main Event.
Wait, oh, it's just called the
Guffawingham.
No, it is called Guffawingham.
Yeah.
Wow.
What is, like, that makes no sense on any level. I need to double check that because I don't want to throw shade on these good.
I think it goes so far into the bonkers that I like
Guffawingham.
It. Guffawingham. That's G-U-F-F-A-W-I-N-G. A regular show.
Ham, guffawing ham. Like, I don't think there's a word that fits less elegantly into the construction of Bellingham than guffawing ham.
But did you go?
Yeah, and it was great.
Cool. Now you,
I had
it's
such
an open
low
mic,
expectations.
Right? Did you just go to observe, or did you?
I observed. I would never. I was talking about this on the show the other day, and it's sad that this is something I would brag about. Like the other day, I mentioned how when you and I went to Mancini's Char House. I had just no interest in singing karaoke. Maybe I'm just becoming a normal person. Like, I just don't have to be showing off all the time. But similarly, I had no interest in trying to do stand-up comedy. I just thought, oh, that'd be kind of fun. I'll see what's up. And I had sort of low expectations because Bellingham is not a huge city. Open mics can be rough, you know, in a bigger city like Seattle. So I was like, well, and also, the name wasn't strong, Guffawingham. Mm-hmm. But it was actually, the comics were really good. At least the open micers. I didn't stay for the whole thing, but the open micers were really good.
I told
this
you.
This one guy.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
This one guy told this joke that was, his whole 5 minutes was this one joke. And the audience was kind of not following it, but it was an incredible joke. He kind of messed up the open. I mean, what I did do, I didn't perform, but I did tell all the comics later how they could make their jokes better.
You gave them notes. Yeah, that's good. I'm sure they appreciated it.
So, they were very open to that. But he kind of messed up the open of it. But basically, he told this sort of this joke about his uncle had some heart trouble, and then they did a heart transplant, and his uncle's body rejected the donor heart. So he said, "That's why I'm going to have like a baby heart, just like surgically implanted next to my regular heart. So when my regular heart gives out, my body will kind of know." The baby heart, they'll recognize it. So that's like a medium joke. But then he went on to describe for 5 straight minutes the life of the baby heart and the adult heart inside his body as the baby heart slowly takes over more responsibility for the big heart. And all of the other organs keep trying to send information to the big heart, but the big heart's like, anything you can say to me, you can say to the baby heart. And it just becomes this whole long meditation on like a son taking over a business. And then eventually the liver, this is literally from this guy's joke, the liver or the pancreas is hanging clothes on a clothesline out in the sun, and the baby heart comes up to the liver, and the liver says, don't tell me. And the baby heart's, yeah, the big heart died. And it's this whole like touching scene where the baby heart is having to tell everyone that the big heart, it's like, it was so elaborate and amazing. And again, I don't think anyone really got it, but it was a solid spoof.
I hate to put you on the spot, but there's no chance you can give this guy a shout out. You don't remember the name.
It didn't help that the MC, who was a sweet guy, I was kind of hanging out with the comics a little bit, and the MC, God bless him, couldn't get anyone's name right. He literally like kept just saying the wrong names of people when they were coming up on stage, to the chagrin of some of the comics. So I don't even, like, if I remembered the guy's name, it might not even really be his name. But it was, again, it was like, I was really impressed. I was like, this is a really, again, you know, it's an open mic, so probably the bit needed some polishing. But I was like, this is a high level of creativity that's being demonstrated randomly on this stage at the Firefly in Bellingham.
I told you I had a dream. This is over a year ago now. I was taking a nap, and nap dreams can be strange. And I was taking a nap, and I had a dream that I had to give a 5-minute stand-up routine. And I realized that I was, and I remember in the dream, the key was that I was so chill about it. I was like, I don't have any material. Mm-hmm. I kept on meaning to. I kind of have an idea of a joke. And then the rest of the dream, I almost like co-opted your dream. The rest of the dream, I was looking for a pencil so I could write down some jokes. But I remember the key thing was, I was a little bummed at myself for not giving it more forethought, but, you know, not really worrying about having, I was opening for somebody or something. But I woke up from that dream and I literally thought to myself, I need 5 minutes of material in case I ever need it. Like, I don't know what, but I just want 5 minutes of material in my back pocket. And I kind of had that thought as I was kind of coming out of this dream. But then at some point I was fully awake and I still held on to that thought. And I haven't let it go. I don't know if you know that, but like I still fantasize about it. I actually started – did I tell you this? I started an email thread to myself, and I'm trying to like – and I have no jokes. I have some ideas that maybe at some point could maybe become jokes. But coming out of that dream, I had an idea of doing like kind of a – kind of – it was going to be kind of a high concept one joke told over 5 minutes, and Genevieve has really encouraged me to dismiss that. She's like, how about you just learn to walk before you try to run? I'm like, that's fair. But the closest thing I have, and again, I'm not going to say anything here because I don't really have anything. I just have some very rough ideas. But what if I did just 5 minutes of grocery store humor? Like, do you think I can do like 5 minutes of stand-up comedy that's basically – it's centralized around my love of and experience in grocery stores.
Absolutely. I think that has a lot going for it as a premise. One, it's relatable, but it's not air travel or bitches be crazy. Or
oh, no, that was going to be like a big part of it. I was going to say grocery store bitches be crazy.
Okay, I'm going to downgrade. I'm going to downgrade my assessment to a solid C minus. Okay. But like, no, it's good because it's relatable, and also it's like it's specific, but it's slightly absurdist. Like, people don't – I don't think there's a ton of grocery store humor that I've heard. I did – a guy did – this was interesting because you had the – on the one end of the spectrum last night, the guy doing the joke about the baby heart growing up and being mentored by the adult heart. And then on the other end, you had clearly some guys who had probably like – maybe watched some YouTube videos or ordered a DVD set about doing stand-up, and it was clear that they were just trying to like activate or tick things off the list of what you should do. So it was like one guy was doing some joke about sushi, but it was like he had to make sure to mention Zen Sushi, which is like a local sushi joint. And it was like it didn't help the joke. It was clear that he was just trying to make it relatable, or like he wanted people to be like, I've been there. Mm-hmm. And it was the other thing that some of these comics were doing that was like less successful was and this goes back to my love of turning trees into paper products and then writing or printing things on that paper. Mm-hmm. A lot of the comics would have their jokes written on their phone.
Oh, yeah.
And then they would lose their place. They would get rattled because, like, they'd try a joke expecting a laugh. It wouldn't get a laugh. And then they'd have to fish their phone out of their back pocket, put in their passcode, and then scroll to whatever notes function they had their next joke in. And I was just like, guys, it's called a coaster. You write shit on the coaster and you take it with you. Like, we have been – this has been – since time immemorial, this is how you do this. Or write it on your hand, or like I used to do in my very brief stand-up career, write it on a piece of paper, tape it into a page of The Stranger, and then make sure you always end your set with the same stupid joke related to The Stranger, which gives you an excuse for having this piece of paper on stage with you. But it's like, I just wanted to say to all of them, like, whatever possible comedy is held within your phone is lost when you have to pull your phone out and, again, punch in your passcode or use your Face ID to open the phone and then find your next joke. Like, you have already lost the battle at that point.
Yeah, and I've seen – this is just – I mean, I'm just going to slip just comfortably right into my OK Boomer pants here and say that I've seen a lot of comedians. I even think our buddy Andy, when last time I saw him at Laughs here in town.
Andy Haynes.
I think he had some stuff on a phone. Now, none of it was awkward. He's not like trying to use facial recognition to. I think he might have had like an electronic device, maybe a phone or something up there. But it just sat on the stool and he would every now and then.
Yeah, that's actually really typical because most comics record the audio of their set with their phone now.
Oh, that makes sense too. Yeah, right. And I would see that a lot at, was it Largo or
LA?
Yeah, what's the LA show where a lot of people will work out their stuff? And I saw
that's Largo.
Yeah, it's Largo. And anyway, you know, and they're working out stuff, so it's a little bit rough around the edges. That's why you're there. And so they'll be reading off of something. But here's my OK Boomer thing is, like, just aesthetically speaking, even if there's no issue with the electronic device, it's kind of I just prefer to see somebody working off of paper. And I don't know why. It's just, again, it's just like, it wasn't Janine Garofalo. I think I'm getting this from that Martin Short character.
Jiminy Glick?
Jiminy Glick. I think I'm literally getting this information from Janine Garofalo being interviewed by Jiminy Glick, which is...
What was it like when you were funny?
Suspect research on my part, to be honest. But I remember him kind of referring to her.
You don't do a lot of show prep, do you?
That is good. But was she one of the first, like, kind of one of those LA alt comics to, like, just, like, for even her specials come out with the piece of paper, like, even for the big shows?
Probably. Well, you know, that seems very possible. The only reason I'm pausing is because we did have her on Livewire years ago now, and her comedy was so interesting to me because, I mean, it was really stream of consciousness. Like, it was – and she didn't have notes. And it was like, you know, I would say that, like, she was the opposite of someone digging around for their cell phone in that it wasn't even like all the jokes were that funny, but there was just something so kind of manic about it in a good way that you were just on the ride with her.
But I'm talking about, that would have been like 30 years ago, though, I think.
Right. You mean, was she one of the first people to just like break down that, like, I don't know if it'd be the fourth wall or what wall it would be, but basically felt comfortable coming out on stage with notes.
Yeah, that it was kind of a look for her. But again, I'm not arguing for it, but I could sort of see it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's another, there's a great, I don't think he's doing it anymore, but a buddy of mine, Scott Moran, speaking of our friend Andy, he's a mutual friend. Scott's a comedian and also a filmmaker, and he made these documentaries called Modern Comedian.
Oh yeah,
and they're really good. And he, you know, they're about a bunch of different. But I think he does one about this guy Ben Cronenberg, maybe Ben Cronenberg did the music for them. Anyway, he did one. The whole thing was a comedian, I believe, if I remember right, just debating about bringing his notebook on stage or not. And the different, I believe there was sort of like some trial and error, but it was really just kind of a study about the question of bringing your book on stage and if that's a crutch or if that helps or, you know, kind of whether or not to do that. This is at this point, we've now doubled the normal time during which we should go to break. So we should probably go to break. But I will say the one thing that I probably, the one good call I made about Livewire was having really limited notes out there. I mean, I have a script for like reading the ads and the intros to people. But basically, you know, when I took over that show, it was a very written show because Courtney, the previous host, is a writer. Oh, by the way, I'm going to be at the Seattle Public Library. Speaking of Courtney, I'm going to be at the Seattle Public Library interviewing her in February about her book. Okay, fine, whatever. It's going to be I'm just going to do this now because it's on my mind. I think it's February 12th, Wednesday, February 12th at the Seattle Public Library. That night I'll be there chatting with Courtney. It's free, I assume, if anybody wants to come out and say hi. But I was when I first started doing the show, I would do these monologues at the top of the show, and I was really tempted to write them. And Carrie wisely said, you know, the bar's going to really go down if people see that you don't have any notes. Like, their expectation gets really – if you have notes, the expectation is really high. And if you don't have notes, the expectation goes way down. And that has been proven out for me. Like, people are pretty cool with whatever goes on up there, as long as they feel like you're doing it in the moment and honestly and off the top of your head, as opposed to as soon as you break out some notes or a script, then people are kind of like, okay, well, let's see what you got, which is never a position. That's never a space I want to play in, because I rarely deliver when I'm playing in that space.
Good, it's happening. Okay, then. message received. I will stop using notes during TBTL.
I will mention, though, as we go to the break, I will mention, Andrew, that even though I said I didn't want to do stand-up last night, mm-hmm. I did have I had 5 minutes in my back pocket that in case I was somehow in some bizarre universe forced to go on stage, mm-hmm. I did have a plan.
Mm-hmm. See?
It was a long story about Rudy's farts that last weekend and how many candles I burned and how many of those candles were weird. Like, you know how you get candles from people that are kind of peripherally in your life? Usually it's like in-laws, God bless. Or like, there's this collection of candles in a closet here at the house that are just, they all have weird names. I'm not doing the bit, by the way, right now. You'll know. But oftentimes when there's like a get together of people who are kind of distantly related to me or Carrie, there are just a lot of candles get given for some reason. I think because it's like a nice gesture and candles are relatively affordable or whatever. But we just have like, not hundreds, but like at least 15 or 20 just weird candles that I'm never going to use. And I honestly was like, why are we keeping these? Well, this weekend, Rudy and I went on this hike in the snow and she ate something. I don't know what she got into. It was horse poop or a dead something or whatever, but it did not agree with her stomach. And I burned through 3 of these giant weird candles. I was so thankful for them because it was like eye-watering what was going on.
Oh, God. Well, that's why we give them. I love candles. Yeah. Eve and I almost have candles burning at all times. We make candles. We also, because now that we're kind of in the candle community, I like to think we're in the candle community.
It's a lifestyle.
Again, and it's spelled with K's, candle community. I didn't want you to picture it that way. People will give us, we got some candles for Christmas that we're burning. They smell so good. These ones that we got from Genevieve's sister are wonderful. I really like the smell of them, but I do think it's funny what they're named, and they're like locally made New Hampshire candles. And I was burning this one, and it smelled really, really good. And I kept on trying to figure out what the scent was because it was so familiar to me. But the name of the scent was Jack Frost. And I was like, I don't think this smells like Jack Frost. I think it smells like something else. And then somebody was over here yesterday and I was like, I love the smell of this candle. And they smelled it and they're like, oh yeah, it's vanilla. Like, that's what it is. It's vanilla. That's not the smell of Jack Frost. I would have just named it vanilla.
Well, yeah, I can't, like, they're in the hall, they're, you know, down the hall, so I can't grab them, but they all do have weird names. Like, you can't just say vanilla. That's like, you know, Glade would have a vanilla candle. Mm-hmm. But, you know, these new fancier ones. And by the way, I'm not trying to say giving a candle is a thoughtless gift, particularly if you make the candle. That's really thoughtful. And I will say this, Andrew. I was loving having that candle burning mm-hmm. as I was watching the football games and trying to interrupt the wafting of Rudy's butt problems. I really did have the thought, oh, this is lovely. Why am I not burning more candles?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. We like to have them. The thing about candles is we should go to a break, but if you need to let them burn for a while, otherwise they're going to kind of canoe and crater on you. So, like, I don't light a candle unless I know I'm going to be home for, like, at least have it lit for about 3 hours or so. So, another excuse not to leave the house.
So, you need to burn it long enough that it, when you say crater, like, why would it crater?
So if you have like kind of a wider
one. You have to burn it long enough for it to not crater?
Yeah, so if you have like one of those kind of wider candles, picture the kind that's like in a glass jar. And of course, the wider, the longer you're going to have it burn. If you just light it and you let it burn for a half hour, an hour, you're only kind of melting the middle of the candle. You need to give it enough time so that there's enough melted wax covering the entire top of the candle, if possible, so that it can kind of all evaporate at the same time and go down. Otherwise, you'll get that thing where you're just burning the middle of the candle lower and lower, but the walls just keep on getting thicker and thicker with wax on the side. Can you picture that?
When are you starting your candle podcast? And what is it going to be called?
I just did. Oh, yeah. Waxing Nostalgic. Let's see here. What do we got?
Wicker Man.
No. I like that. I'll have to make basket. I'll have to make wicker chairs too. But
yes, right. Okay, let's take a break. 40 minutes into the show. Sorry, Everlane, or whoever else, whatever other fine products we'll be promoting here in a moment. Let's do that, and then we'll be back with more TBTL in just a moment.
Sincerely miss those heavy metal bands I used to go see on the landing in the summer. She fell in love with the drummer. She fell in love with the drummer. She fell in love. Shiny, shiny pants and bleached blonde hair. A double kick drum.
See, the problem with playing this, Mr. Walsh, is then I just don't want to start talking about my weightlifting gym. I want to just keep listening to this wonderful song by Wilco.
I love this song so much. I could hear this song a million times. I probably have, but it will always transport me to a very specific snowstorm in Boston when I just really connected with this record many, many years ago.
Oh, man, one day me and Genevieve and Jeff Tweedy are going to be on that deserted island, and I'm going to ask him to play that song, and he's going to say, "No requests." That was another, oh my God, I just have a million boring stories in me today. So I'll just quickly throw another one in. The guy who I was telling you, I was explaining my job stuff, and then he said, "Is it on Sirius Satellite?" He was such an interesting guy to me because it was like clearly he was one of those dudes that spend a lot of time really focusing on particular entertainment products or performers. Mm-hmm. So,
like a real Adam Sandler head or something like that?
Well, but more specific, he had found out about Bellingham because for a while he was following the actress Terry Garr as she did her one-person show up the West Coast. And very he had specific. Seen her, right? So that was one thing. His other point of emphasis was loves Todd Rundgren. Hmm. And like the I don't want to work, I want to bang on the drum all day guy. Mm-hmm. And was telling me a story about how, like, so he apparently just would go see Todd Rundgren anywhere Todd Rundgren plays. And Todd Rundgren had recently played a local casino. And this guy was lamenting how some of the other people there were not true Rundgren heads because they were yelling out requests for songs. And if you know anything about Todd Rundgren, you know that he absolutely refuses to play songs if you yell them out.
Obviously.
And it was like the level of disdain he had for the people near him at the show who did not know this about Todd Rundgren was quite something.
I mean, how do you go to a rib cook-off and not know that? That's what I want to know.
Exactly. Right. Oh, you know what? This guy was from Ohio, and he really appreciated that I dropped a Michael Stanley reference.
Nice. Also, speaking of, I know the name Terry Garr, but I actually don't know why or what I know her from.
I don't either. She was one of those people who was sort of like in our childhood, always on like the Tonight Show.
Yeah.
And things, but I couldn't tell you what she was in, but she was just kind of a famous person. I assume she is an actor.
Yes, and singer, comedian, but she was born, she didn't grow up there, but she was born in Lakewood, Ohio, where I spent my youth.
I think he had a particular, remember I texted you last night and asked you if you knew about a particular poet from Ohio?
Oh, you know what, I'd forgotten about that, but yes, I was going to ask you.
That was due to the conversation with this guy. I think his sort of, his way of orienting his entertainment options are they from the Midwest, particularly Ohio? And then are they coming to a casino near me? And I said, well, where's Todd Rundgren from? He goes, I think Detroit, but you know, it's like almost Cleveland.
Sure, yeah. That you or me.
Is that supposed to be happening?
I don't think it's me, is it? Oh, shoot. Wait, what the heck was that? That was me this time.
Hey, this is Andrew.
Wait.
Leave me a message. Thanks.
What is happening?
Am I calling you accidentally?
No.
Hi, Andrew. This is Luke from TBTL.
That is so weird.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with the show. We're trying to get on Sirius Satellite, but until then, we're just a podcast, and I need to talk to you right away because Todd Rundgren and Terry Garr are teaming up for a show at the Emerald Queen Casino, and I really think we should go. What was that, by the way? Were you calling yourself or was I calling you from one of my many devices in this house?
But I was so confused because I how much detail do I guess a lot. I was looking at my phone.
I guess a lot. I was never this is the most accurate thing that's ever been said on TBTL.
My phone had some sort of a notification, so I just glanced at my phone quickly, right? And it was nothing I had to worry about. So then I plug my phone back in, and my phone is plugged into like a USB strip I have here just to keep it charging while I'm talking. Now, that USB strip is also plugged into the computer that runs IPDTL, which is the computer that you and I are able to talk through. So when that ringing happened, I assumed that something happened when I plugged my phone in to that USB bank. But it turns out, I think while setting my phone down, I just hit a button on the computer that was dialing me as if I was going to be a guest on TBTL. Like if we were going to have Kiki Lolo on the show, I would just like push a button on the computer and it would call her. Well, there's a preset for my own phone on this thing, and I think I accidentally hit that. So uninteresting answer to everyone, but I was just trying to get myself as a guest on TBTL, which is still a dream.
I wish I had a better
dream for me.
I wish I had a better message to leave for you just in my back pocket. Yes. I could have told you the story about Rudy's farts and the candle, but I'd already kind of used that one.
I got a lot of that. Got a lot of that story.
Okay, so just I'm like that character in Frogger, just jumping from one story from the last 24 hours to another as each one sinks into the river that is life. But,
how are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling great. So I mentioned yesterday that I've been interested in trying to start doing some weightlifting, just as a way of losing some weight and getting in shape. And then I had scheduled a session at a local weight gym. I mean, I just Googled weightlifting Bellingham. It was one of the first ones that came up. And I was a little bit apprehensive because of the website had that kind of like a lot of verbiage around this kind of like, you know, we're no nonsense and we get shit done, and you know, kind of like there's this one phrase that floats around, do epic shit, which it was not this particular gym's motto, but it kind of, they were doing some things that were adjacent to that.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody ever like tells you, yeah, you know, here's what we do at this place, we just do epic shit, mm-hmm. immediately you should find a different place mm-hmm. to do whatever you're mm-hmm. doing. But so I was a little apprehensive. I showed up, and my suspicions were sort of confirmed, Andrew. I get there, and this trainer who I had been emailing with, the person who owns the gym, I believe, she sort of comes and opens the door for me. It is like in a – and this is actually pretty typical, I guess, but it's just – there's all these industrial kind of like buildings that are almost borderline storage units but really big, and people just have weird companies in these different industrial – like it's a huge building that has 20 different things in it. So one of these little kind of areas of it is this gym, and I come in and it's like there's two buff guys, not bearded, by the way, for the record. There's like two buff guys working out. It's very quiet. One of them is listening to 710 ESPN on a speakerphone, probably listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy mm-hmm. or something mm-hmm. as he does burpees, which was an interesting move. But it was eerily quiet in there. And as I walk in, and I had emailed this woman and said, hey, I'm looking to kind of get in shape and lose some weight. So as I'm walking in, she says, so you want to cut some weight? Literally, that's like the first thing she says to me. And I go, yeah, I do. I want to lose some weight. And she goes, well, you don't need to exercise for that. You can just cut calories. And I'm standing in there and I'm like, do you like want me to pay you money to come to this gym? Like, I mean, she's not wrong about that, but also it's like, do I have to convince you that I want to lift weights? Like it was a weird opening. And I have to be honest with you, some very small part of me wanted to just walk out at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was already feeling super insecure and uncomfortable because I'm going to have to explain all of my like, what I eat, what I weigh, which is hilarious because I used to start this show by listing my weight. Boy, how things change. But I was going to have to basically do this whole intake session with her while these two dudes are just silently working on the madness that is their upper torsos.
And it's a like, pretty, there it's was like no close enough space that like
yes,
everybody
there was no
hear it.
Office. It wasn't like, yeah. please step into my office and let's talk about this. So it starts with basically, why are you here? If you want to lose weight, just eat less. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and so I literally said, like, do you, well, would you like to sit down and talk this out or something? Like, you know, like I felt like I was sort of doing the, I was doing this, the part of the sales job that I kind of felt like the person who owns the gym should be doing. Mm-hmm. So then we go and like sit kind of in a, in one part of this open space where these guys continue to work out. And then we have this really awkward conversation where she's taking notes on her phone. And she's like, what did you eat in the last 24 hours? And I tell her, and she's like, well, like, would you eat salad? And I'm like, yeah. She goes, do you put too much dressing on it? And I was like, probably, because I probably do. But it was just like this, it was the most weird all over the map conversation. And then it was time to do the actual kind of like weight stuff, like just to learn about it, I guess, because their terminology is crazy around weightlifting. Have you ever done any weightlifting?
I've done zero weightlifting. I have some memory.
You'd be good at it. I think you're pretty strong, actually.
I think somebody gave me a like a bench press bar one time. This has been a long time ago, probably even high school. And I remember being very surprised that I could barely lift the bar without weights on. And I'm not joking, because it was like such a balance thing. It might have even been during a time, maybe it was post-college, during a time when I was like, you know, going to the YMCA every day, doing various things on the, you know, kind of the weight machines where things are, what do you call like the exercise machines that are weight-based, but they're not free weights, whatever those are.
Yeah. So a lot of them have kind of a proprietary brand name.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You might say like a Nautilus machine or a Cybex or something.
Yeah. And they have a whole bunch for different parts of your body. Anyway, I think it was during a time where I was kind of like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm getting a little bit of strength. And then somebody said, well, try this. And they just gave me the bar without weights. And I was like, whoa, because there's so much balance involved in that, you know, probably.
And also like a real weight bar does have some weight to it. I think it's probably like 20 pounds or 30 pounds. Just the bar. Mm-hmm. So again, I'm doing all of this intake stuff, which is really embarrassing for me, as these two guys are working out around me, one of them listening to 710 ESPN. I found something that's even less interesting than John Clayton during football season, Andrew. John Clayton when my football team is no longer even in contention.
God.
Like, I realized that, like, you and I, we kind of throw a lot of shade at John Clayton. I think deservedly so. But it's like, during the season, at least there's some nugget of, like, is Cliff Averill going to go? Actually, mm-hmm. Cliff Averill doesn't play for the team. Is Ziggy Ansah going to be able to go? I went with perpetually injured D linemen. That's the space that I'm playing in right now. I'm like, doing this tutorial, like, in front of these guys, and I feel so embarrassed because it's just an embarrassing process, and I'm really trying to just kind of like, I'm trying to just like go with it and just not be, I don't know, I'm just trying to just be in the moment. I'm trying to Ram Dass it if possible. And so at one point she's like, has me do all these Olympic weightlifting things. They are more complicated than they should be, or at least more complicated than you'd think. There's all these different kinds of lifts. There's the clean, there's the snatch, there's the power clean, there's the
I'm a power
there's
clean.
Like all, yeah, right. That would be great if you guys did a spot list about the Olympic weightlifting move, the clean.
Yes, we'll get there.
Or I'm a crossover, sure. Maybe, yeah, you guys just, yeah, have some Olympic weightlifting experts on. So I don't know any of this stuff, but I had done CrossFit a long time ago, and there's a little bit of that in CrossFit, but it was just kind of like, I didn't really know how to do the stuff, and I just wanted her to, she was like, okay, well, show me what you got with a clean. And I was like, I don't know how to do that. So then she would kind of show me, and I would do it. I'm making her sound like she was not nice, and she wasn't unnice. She just was kind of pretty serious, and like, I don't need the person who's doing weight training with me to be, you know, a stand-up comic, but the seriousness of it and the kind of lack of rapport was adding to my discomfort, mm-hmm, in the situation.
Mm-hmm.
So she kind of shows me how to do this one move, and it's where you like take the bar and you basically press it above your head, and then you do a squat with it. And I do a squat, and I guess I don't go down deeply enough. And she goes, She goes, okay, terrible form, which I'm sure it was terrible form. That actually didn't offend me. But then she goes, so your hamstrings are tight. The good news is we can fix it. And I was like, okay. So then she's showing me how to do a hamstring stretch, which I'm kind of like, okay, I know that I'm complaining because you're not giving me enough explanation on these Olympic weightlifting moves. But on the other hand, I did play organized sports for 17 years of my life. So I can probably stretch out my hams. Like, we spent $20 worth of time doing a hamstring stretch, which was awkward because I'm doing it. And then one of the buff dudes steps over, who's actually very nice, and he goes, I actually like to do this. And then he starts showing me a stretch. And I'm like, I had kind of this veil in my mind that these guys are not even noticing what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. But when one of the buff guys was trying to help me stretch my hamstrings, I found out also that I have a long femur, Andrew.
Don't brag.
Not to brag. But, my femur is long relative to my torso, I guess, which means that my hamstrings are always going to be. She goes, well, there's a couple ways to do it. She goes, you could either just stretch your hamstrings or eventually you just power through and they pop. And I go, is that good? She goes, well, I mean, yeah, they loosen up after that. And I go, permanently? Like, when someone pops a hammy, that seems usually like a bad outcome. But, and again, I'm making this, in the retelling of it, I'm making this sound like it was just a total nightmare. It was not a total nightmare, to the point where when it was over, I actually signed up for two more sessions. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, I was really trying to just, how do I put it? I was trying to not be put off by the fact that I was uncomfortable, because mm-hmm. I'm expecting that to be part of this process. And I was trying to just not be my normal self, which is, if something is not exactly perfect to my specifications, I just bail on it. Mm-hmm. But then after that, I went and I took Rudy to the dog park and the trail, and we went on a jog, and I was kind of thinking about it, and I realized I don't like this lady. Like, like, I don't vibe with her. I don't want to pay her $100 an hour two more times. Oh, and by the way, that's another thing. It cost me $100 for this, which, you know, I mean, she's a professional and she should charge for her time. But it was like, all that happened was I did various moves that I don't remember, answered some questions about if I'm putting too much salad dressing on things, and then left $100 poorer.
Well, and, lighter, so that's working.
I mean, that is good. I'm losing weight $100 at a time out of my wallet.
Can I ask you, so you did the stretch. You did some sort of a squat, did you say? And she said bad form.
Yeah.
And then she said, let's bad stretch form. You out a little bit and then stretch you out. Now, did you have more opportunities then to do some more actual weight lifting?
Yeah, but it was all with this, like, a really light amount of weight because it was all about form. So I did a bench press. I did, you know, like they said, this Olympic style. It's all. Oh, that was the other thing. I apparently have not known what is a barbell my whole life. I always thought barbell was similar to dumbbell. You know what I mean? Like the small ones that you just like at the hotel gym. Those are dumbbells. I think I thought dumbbells and barbells were the same. Barbell is the big one, the one you bench press with. Did you know that?
I always thought that a barbell was something like the old timey wrestlers who wear the singlets and have a
kettlebell.
They have like a wax mustache and it's like 1930. And if they're holding something, I thought that was a barbell.
Nope, it's that big. It's the big one. It's the one that you said you were surprised it was as hard to lift as it was. I literally didn't know that was called a barbell, which is weird because I did lift weights in high school as part of sports. I just never learned the term for that and always was just kind of categorizing it. And that, by the way, was also a quite embarrassing moment because she asked me about the equipment I had and I was saying, well, I have some barbells at home. And she was and I was thinking of like dumbbells, which I do have here. And again, this is just like in the basically silence of this gym as these other two guys are there working out. And she's like, what do you mean barbell? And I'm like, I don't know. What's a barbell actually? And she's like, it's that thing over there. So it was just kind of like, you know, one thing after another. But again, I was at the end of it. I didn't feel so negatively about the thing that I was like, I'm never coming back here. I really thought, well, I need to learn how to do this stuff. But then later I was sort of ruminating on it. And I was like, I think I can learn this stuff from a person who I'm vibing with a little bit more. But what I was, this is the part where I will pat myself on the back. I was trying to channel Andrew a little bit here, believe it or not. One of the things I really admire about you is I feel like you have good pretty good boundaries, and I think you're pretty good at being honest about things when something's not working for you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not all the time, but like basically my impulse was to just lie and say, I can't go to these. When I decided I didn't want to go to the other sessions, my impulse was to just lie and say, I got some work stuff going on. I'm not going to be able to make it, and then just kind of do a sort of slow fade.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, I don't want to lie to this person. I'm just going to tell them, like, you know. So I'd gotten, you know, an invoice from the paying the money, and so I hit reply on that, and I was like, I think I said something like, hey, thanks for your time. Before you, because she was going to like write up some kind of meal plan for me. I was like, before you invest any more time in this, I just want to let you know I'm not going to come to those other sessions. I didn't feel like we were 100% connecting, and so I'm going to see what else is out there. But thanks again for your time, and good luck with the gym or something. And
so
then I sent that
you
to her.
Wait, this invoice that you got, it was an invoice because you paid in advance?
It was an email. No, I had paid for the session that I went to yesterday.
Okay, so you didn't pay in advance for these other sessions? You signed up for them, and you would have paid afterwards, and you're saying,
yes.
Take me off the
and
list.
Actually,
you didn't have to get a refund or anything, so that's good.
No. But I was kind of going back and forth as to if that was mean of me to say, basically, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to go to these sessions because I didn't feel like we connected. Like, is that unnecessary information for this trainer?
No, I think that's really good. I think that's really good because it's honest. I appreciate what you said about me being kind of knowing my limitations or just being very forthright about what I'm comfortable with, whether it's a social situation or whatnot. But I also don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Like, I've said many times before that sometimes you have to be honest, but I also have no problem with a white lie. Like, we live in a society. There are societal norms. Sometimes you don't like somebody's shirt, but you don't have to tell them. Or if they ask, you say, yeah, you know, whatever it is. But sometimes a little bit of truth is good. In this way, it wasn't like, you suck, your bedside manner is bad, or you didn't put it all on her, but you were honest about saying you didn't feel super comfortable there. And that is something that she can choose to think about or not. You know, I actually think that was a really good way of putting it.
Well, I was kind of proud of myself because, again, sending an email like that into the universe and then not being able to manage the other person's experience with it is very hard for me.
Yeah, sure.
But then, of course, I sent it and then I was like, oh, is she going to – what's she going to say? And then she said nothing and I realized I don't think she checks the email that the receipt came from.
Oh, sure.
Like
okay.
It's some auto-generated thing related to the particular billing system using. So then what I had to do this morning was forward – my breakup email to her other email account that I know she checks. It's like the admin account on the website. And I just had to say, just want to make sure this is on your radar.
Oh, no. Now you haven't heard back.
Now, right. If I haven't heard back now, she is butthurt. And, you know, I'm just going to have to live with that. And I'm okay with it.
Butthurt or just doesn't, you know, really care that. Just moving on with the other business she has that
yeah,
day. Yeah,
sure. Which would be fair as well. But it's funny because, like, I sent the email and I was like, oh, God, I hope this doesn't start a thing. And then I had to basically forward it and be like,
yeah, that's
did you see this thing? Did you see this thing I sent you saying I don't want to work out at your gym?
Right.
But then here's the thing. So then I you know, I Google around for another gym, and there's this other one that is over – I'm going to call it the Self-Improvement District of Bellingham. It's in this different business park that basically has hot yoga, the AA – they have AA meetings there, and just like a variety – like karate places, and then this other gym that's – it's in a very similar space. But it's like – They're super responsive. I emailed them and they were like, yeah, come on in. The first session is free. We'll sit down with you. We'll make a whole plan. They were like really nice. And I was like, oh, this is how this is supposed to feel.
Did you tell them like straight up, like just to get ahead of it, that you sometimes put too much salad dressing on your salad? You should.
Yeah, well, I actually updated my Twitter bio. So I'm pretty much out there now for anyone who's following me, which I assume these people are. I will tell you this, though. I was just kind of killing time driving around with Rudy yesterday post the dog park. And I had Googled this other place and I went, because it was on the way home, and I drove past it, and they just have these like enormous semi truck tires just piled outside.
Yeah,
and I'm like, am I gonna have to push those somewhere?
I think you are.
Like, but anyway, I already have a better vibe off of this other place where they're gonna like they're not gonna charge me $100 to tell me I'm putting too much salad dressing on things, and they seem very responsive and nice, and so I don't know, I don't have a good power out to that story, but it was. It was quite an adventure yesterday for me, and I'm hoping that I have a sesh with these new folks tomorrow, and I'll of course, keep everyone posted on how that goes.
Let me ask you a question as you think about continuing this or even something like this. Do you ever also calculate, well, even if I'm not loving this, it'll be good for TBTL? Like,
I think about that all the time.
Yeah, this is a good story, even if it's – I sort of had a little bit of that with the snowstorm. I was kind of like, well, if I get stuck here – I mean, it turns out it wasn't a good story. I just ate onion soup. But I was kind of like, well, if I have some sort of a grand adventure trying to escape from St. Paul, maybe it'll be good for the show.
Yes, I'm thinking that all the time. I'm not trying to create scenarios to have hashtag content, but if something happens, and particularly if it's something that's awkward – or where I have complex feelings, I do think, well, this will be something to talk about on the show.
Yeah, it's a kind of a good motivating thing when it's something that, like, when it's something that's good for you, like weightlifting or maybe potentially rollerblading or what have you, like expanding
Speaking
our comfort
which,
zone a little bit.
Are you going back to that this weekend? I mean, you're going to have another lesson, or are the lessons over?
I need to figure that out. It's a little bit confusing. I probably should. You know, the holidays, they took 2 weeks off. Then I was traveling and then for vacation. Then I was traveling for work. And so I really got out of it. I'm glad you raised that. I probably should go back for a lesson. My thought was, listen, I've taken two lessons so far. What I need to do is just spend more time on these things. What I feel like right now I'm at the point where I just need to not necessarily be in a small gymnasium just going back and forth, like just in this very small space learning another technique and another technique. I need to just have some time by myself, like, you know, like spend some hours on these things going over what I already know and reacquainting, because I just haven't put them on in so long. So I don't know, though, you raising that, maybe that's a little bit of a cop-out on my part, because let's face it, like also you know, people. So the vast majority of our audience has to get up for kids or work or whatever it is on a weekend.
Right.
But like for me, you know, knowing that I have to wake up around 8:30 or something on a Saturday so that I can drive, you know, 25 minutes to go to this place isn't the most appealing to me. I'd rather just like kind of now take what I know and just spend, because I think a big part of this is going to be spending the time on the skates, right? Just like doing the time. Mm-hmm. And so yes. I'm a little bit more tempted to maybe, I want to go back to maybe one more rink day for me. And then not long after that, see what would happen if I like got to Green Lake via bus or something and then put on my rollerblades there and tried going around Green Lake. I think that'll be a really good experience. But what do you think? Am I just talking myself out of going to lessons? Cause it's kind of like what I was telling you about weightlifting yesterday. It's like, kind of like, it's not the sexy fun part. I just want to be to the part where I can just do it. And it's kind of entertaining.
Well, if you do break up with the roller skating at the JCC, I will be happy to send them an email and then forward
on my behalf
from a different account. The thing is, though, I mean, honestly, I think you should just go to Green Lake, because you're going to learn. You've done two lessons, so you kind of have the falling part down, right? And then like you're still learning when you're at Green Lake. It's just there, you know, the bumpers are off the bowling lane, as it were. Like, but you'll like, so if you were to crash, you're just really going to crash. But you're still learning while you're there. Like, I think you, this isn't like trying to learn a foreign language or something where I think you need to sort of like punish yourself or not punish yourself. But like, yeah, I think you just go to Green Lake and then just skate as far or blade as far as you feel comfortable. And then if you don't feel comfortable, like maybe bring your shoes in a backpack.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I wouldn't get on the bus in my rollerblades.
Opt out at any moment.
Yeah. No, I'm thinking
really?
Like,
well, you haven't lived.
My only concern is then I have my shoes, which means the only thing I could do with them is probably put them in my backpack and then wear them as I'm skating around Green Lake, which isn't the worst thing in the world. It'll just change my balance a little bit. You know, rollerblading with a backpack. But again, I think I just need to kind of do it and get used to it.
Yes, I think you should just head down there like a young Luke Burbank did with his unicycle and just start going for it and wait for the chicks to line up.
No, that's why I got into the rollerblading game. All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
All right, obviously, we didn't get to the Michelin star story, but I do think it's kind of interesting, so let's maybe talk about it tomorrow. Because there's a lot around that whole thing. And just these services that, like, it turns out a lot of these chefs are really burned out by the Michelin star system, which I think the first time we talked about it, I was like, this French chef is all butthurt about losing a star. But the more I read the story today, there's an update on that and just the whole thing, the more I was like, I kind of get where some of these chefs are coming from. So maybe tomorrow we'll talk about that. In the meantime, though, are there any emails or V-mails that are of interest to you and me and the listening public of America?
Yeah, I wanted to address one thing. There was a little conversation going on Slack yesterday. Somebody wondering what happened to us thanking the donors of the day. And I just want to add some clarity as to what's going on. We basically have a list of people who donated at a certain level that the thank you gift is you get an on-air thank you. And that level is $12 a month or $144, like, one-time donation. And everybody who gave at that level, we've already thanked. There's a whole nother group of people, a whole nother group of people who gave at what we call the dazzling donor level, which is the highest level available. And they get a special message that they can write themselves and submit. We'll be getting to those pretty soon. We're going to send out a link to everybody so that they can fill out their dazzling donor message. But if you're somebody who gave at the, essentially we're done with the dazzling, I'm sorry, we're done with the daily donors, that $12 a month level. If you are somebody who is giving at that level or gave at that level and feel like we skipped you, just email me, andrew@tbtl.net, and I'll either see if we did thank you on a show and you might have missed it, or if you accidentally slipped through the cracks, or if you're in a different category for some reason, and we can work it all out. So, did that make sense, Luke?
Yep.
So I feel like that 100%. Stuff gets a little bit complicated. Now, this is really fun. Cheryl in Corvallis is coordinating apparently the fourth annual Valentine's card exchange. I also saw
On
Slack. This is really sweet. Of course, our buddy Melisande in New York does this for the Christmas cards.
Pen pal thing, right?
Yeah, Christmas cards. Right. Yeah. And so this is the Valentine's card exchange, and this is what she posted to Slack. I hope it's okay to share it to the broader audience here. She says, join in with your fellow tens and cure a little global loneliness. Here's how it works. Send an email to this address, tbtlvalentens@gmail.com. That's valentens@gmail.com. And in the subject line, either put in, out, change, or new. So if you if you've participated last year and you don't have any changes, just type in the subject line. If you want to be removed from the list, type out. If you want to do it again, but your address has changed, type change in the subject line. And if you're brand new, type new in the subject line in an email to tbtlvalentens@gmail.com. And basically what happens is Cheryl will put together various groups and share addresses, and then people can swap Valentine's cards. It's a pretty cool thing.
That is really sweet.
It's very special, yeah.
Cheryl, thanks for doing that. And Andrew, I'm glad you signal amped that. That sounds really fun. I would be unsurprised to hear that you had a different experience with this, Andrew, in school, but I loved Valentine's Day as a kid. But it was because I went to a school where you had to give everyone a Valentine's. Like, they were, you know, Daniel Bagley Elementary School. They were, like, they were pretty on it. Like, so there, it wasn't the thing where you got, you know, I didn't feel there's no way to feel left out of the thing because you had to bring the number of Valentines of other kids in the class and then give them out. And we got to build a little, like, mailbox, a Valentine's mailbox that we'd put on our desk.
Yep.
And then we would just walk around and drop a card in everyone's little mailbox. I loved that.
Yeah, I don't have necessarily bad feelings related to that. I just have kind of a vague, kind of gauzy memory of everything that you just said. Like, I can almost smell the hardened sugar of those small little hearts that everybody get, and then you would decorate a shoebox,
sweethearts,
and cut a hole in the top of it, and then people would drop it in. And yeah, I feel like I just have this memory of the smell of elementary school Valentine's Day, and I think it brings me mostly good memories. It was the years that came later that were really tough on me, Luke. No. This was interesting. Laurel in Ferguson wanted to weigh in on. Who said, you look marvelous. We couldn't figure out what that was a cultural reference to yesterday. And then you were the one who said, I think that was just Billy Crystal doing that. And we weren't sure if Billy Crystal was making fun of somebody in particular or spoofing someone in particular. She says that I'm pretty sure Billy Crystal was doing an impression of the actor Fernando Lamas with the you look marvelous quote. And I did a little bit of Googling, and it does seem... That seems to bear out. I didn't see this is such. I mean, I know I'm bad with pop culture of today and even of my youth, but this is a real blind spot for me. Fernando Lamas is the father of actor Lorenzo Lamas.
Lorenzo Lamas?
That was his
Renegade.
I looked him up because I know the name. So he was famous for Falcon Crest. What was Renegade?
I thought that he was in like one of those bad sort of like. How would you call it? Non-network produced TV shows where he rode a motorcycle around Lorenzo Lamas. Nice. I thought it was called Renegade.
I think I know what you're talking about. I think maybe I do remember that now. Yeah, there it is. Renegade.
Wasn't that kind of? It was called Renegade.
Mm-hmm.
Man, look at the memory on this guy. Look at the big brain on Burbs.
Yeah.
I think Lorenzo Lamas, the kid, has moved into that sort of Dean Cain. He's playing in that Dean Cain space now. Which is like guys who were hunky but their careers kind of stalled out, and now they've become, you know, I don't want to throw shade at Lorenzo Lamas without knowing this for a fact, but I thought I remembered he was kind of going sort of pivoted hard right.
Oh, let's see here. I'm not sure. I'm on his Wikipedia page. They don't kind of say he was born in 1958. I can tell you that much.
Okay.
But that's not
there's like
the
this kind of
thing
there's this
it.
Certain kind of, well, you know, you see it with what's his name, stupid Chuck Woolery, yeah. Where it's like these, I feel like there's just sort of a kind of a guy who realizes that they can get a little bit more life in their career if they just start catering to the basically MAGA crowd. They start like making movies about topics like, I feel like Dean Cain is in this. He was the guy that played Superman on that like Lois and Clark TV show with Ofui Terry. I forget her last name. Was it Gar? Was it Terry?
Was not
Gar?
Terry Gar.
No. But anyway,
Hatcher?
And then now
Hatcher,
he's like
maybe,
no. maybe yeah, Hatcher, Terry Hatcher. Okay. Anyway, he's now making these movies where it's like the immigrants are coming for him and his family, and he has to shoot his way out or whatever.
Oh,
it's like these kind of straight
Dawn
to video.
Shit.
Yeah, which is funny because. You know, Red Dawn, as a kid, I remember being fascinated with Red Dawn. I've talked about it on the show a lot. Like, I was really scared by Red Dawn because I was in a home where we were told that the apocalypse was probably coming. So I grew up with some real fears around that, and Red Dawn was confirming them. But only looking back on it, I'm like, what a piece of shit propagandist movie that is.
I don't know much about it. I'm sure people listening know more, but I remember learning that Red Dawn, which I don't think I saw as a youth, but just knew of it as a cultural phenomenon, and everybody said you should watch it. So I think I watched it later in life, but I also think watching it, I had already known that it was the filmmaker's very first film, and his background was really as a right-wing Second Amendment advocate, and really, like, this movie was really it wasn't a director who accepted a script or a director who, I'm trying to think if it was the writer or director or both, but either way, this was actually, he was a more of an activist first and a filmmaker second, and that's why that movie came out. I mean, it also is, I mean, there are a lot of movies from the Cold War era that you know, the country was focused on this idea of, you know, a threat from outside, especially if it was somehow communist or what have you. I don't think you had to be a super right-wing filmmaker in order for that to kind of get into your orbit as a creator. But
right.
with this particular guy, yeah. it was an extension of his politics.
By the way, just for the Lamas heads out there, I'm deep diving on Lorenzo Lamas's Twitter feed. I don't know what his politics are. I don't want to besmirch him without really knowing the deal. I did find one tweet where he said, this is in 2015, "I don't make political comments, but I got to say @RealDonaldTrump has got both sides talking out of their asses and WTF at Fox News #, you're fired." So I don't really know how to there's a lot to unpack from that. But it's unclear to me if Lorenzo Lamas has actually pivoted hard right. So I want to retract that statement.
Yes. No, he's not a
as of press time. I've not been able to confirm.
He's not a James Woods. Here's what
exactly.
I'm looking at.
Exactly. Thank you. James Woods is very much in the model of these kinds of people I'm talking about.
Would you allow me to read from the blog Right Wing Chicks, which you can mm-hmm. find at rightwingchicky.wordpress.com. This is a post from 2008. The headline is "Conservative Hollywood, They Do Exist." Okay, there are some big names that we know are Republicans. The nice Baldwin, the Governator. But by the way, the Governator was trying to fight climate change too. Don't forget that.
Wait, they call the nice Baldwin?
I assume that's
is that
Steven?
What they call him? Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's interesting they call him the nice. Is that because he played Barney Rubble in the Flintstones' Viva Rock Vegas? I'm wondering where they get. Was it because he was in Biodome with Pauly Shore? Also, why do I know this much about Stephen Baldwin?
I don't know.
Career?
Maybe you start your candle podcast. You start the Stephen Baldwin podcast. Anyway, so they have this long, long list of actors. Now, this is 2008. This isn't necessarily Trumpy. It's just a list of people they say who are in Hollywood who are conservatives. Lorenzo Lamas yeah. is on the list along with Dan Aykroyd.
Dan Aykroyd. That doesn't surprise me. I don't know why. I don't know where I get that from. Who else is on the list? Let's do it. Let's just do it. Let's.
I mean, this is a very long list, so let me cherry pick here. We have John Cryer, your buddy, is on the list.
Huh.
Daddy.
He's listed as conservative?
I mean, who knows?
I don't
this
think this
list?
List is. I mean, listen.
Really? You don't think this passes not, the journalistic rigor of, I,
only
of a
because,
Jimmy Glick
only
interview?
The only thing that can stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a blog. Good guy with a blog would actually be kind of
yeah.
a funny name for a blog.
Yeah.
Only the reason I'm questioning the John Cryer thing is because I follow John Cryer on Twitter and I feel like he's extremely progressive with his politics.
Yeah,
so that,
I don't.
That calls this whole list into question.
I really don't know about this list at all. But they do have Daddy Yankee on the list, which I find interesting because I didn't realize that we knew who Daddy Yankee was in 2008. Let's see here. Lou Ferrigno.
Reggaeton.
Here. Eric Estrada and Lou Ferrigno. They're of a certain era, I would say.
Huh.
Elizabeth Hasselbeck, co-host of The View.
That's not a surprise because she's very Christian. I know we have Christian
okay,
listeners.
Yeah,
I'm not trying to assume you are all, conservative politically. But yeah, she was. She got famous because she was on Survivor, like one of the first Survivors, and she went very far. And then she got on The View, and
Dennis Miller. That doesn't seem right. Just kidding.
Oh come on,
Craig T. Nelson, Tom
what
Selleck,
about Jiminy
Gary
Glick?
Sinise. I'm looking for Jimmy.
What about Jiminy Glick doing a? Dennis Miller joke. Can I do that? Can I construct
can
that?
Sure. God, you really set yourself up.
I know this is bad. How about Dennis Miller doing a Jiminy Glick joke? Would that be easier? I'll work on it.
Okay,
overnight.
You work on
I'll,
that.
I'll
that's
have it ready for tomorrow's show.
Add that to your 5 minutes that you can do with Guffawingham. Let's see here. I'm just looking for names.
Look at
know.
This guy over here, Boutros, golly. Wait, no. I couldn't land it.
But you tried.
I couldn't land it. I didn't have anything after Boutros, golly. I needed to shift into the lower talking earlier in the line.
I would say, though, that I really was picturing you shuffle your papers there. So you got that part
okay.
down.
Yeah, babe.
And oh, Christ, never mind. This list is too long. It's a bunch of people that you know.
Okay.
It's a bunch of people that you know. It's done. We're done.
Okay.
I just killed the show.
All right, we're done here.
I killed the show. No. Let me end on something better. How about the jukebox shenanigans, and then we'll go. Sure. Lisa says, I'm cracking up hearing how Andrew and Genevieve played 911 as a joke at that conservative bar as they were leaving. Here's my jukebox shame. On my sister's bachelorette party in 2003, my best friend and I got incensed at the bartender. I cannot remember what they did. We were the oldest of the party, so I don't know why that's relevant, but that's how they were feeling. We put on Don't Cry for Me, Argentina by Madonna. We paid for it to play 20 times. I highly recommend this song for these occasions. It should not be on any public playlist. When it started playing the third time, the bartenders yelled obscenities at us and unplugged the jukebox. My sister was mortified, but we were not. It was worth it. Power out. From Lisa.
Sometimes you got to do it.
Sometimes you got to do
just,
it.
You just got to take life by the cord. You know, you got to just like sometimes let life bounce off of you. What did they say in that video?
Oh, yeah. And that's what we're going to do, literally. Yeah. We're going to literally let life bounce off us.
Yeah. All right. Is that it?
Yeah. I think we can leave it there.
A lot of the times what we like to tell people is that you have to let life bounce off of you.
Yep.
Right? And so we are going to do just that literally in the literal sense.
There you go. Chop and steal are those guys.
Love those guys. You said that the because one of Chop and Steal is also the yo-yo guy, right?
I
who is on
thought
what
so.
We do in the Shadows.
Am I right about that? What's his name?
Yeah.
Well, K. Strauss is his stage name as a
yeah Kenny Strauss,
yeah.
Yo-Yo Man. Do you have? Can we just because I'm okay, in a weird
yeah.
mood?
Yeah.
Do you have like the Yo-Yo Man? Do you have that full tape or like him do it? Does he do a rap or something?
Yeah. So he's done a couple, and I grabbed a newer one recently. But is this the one where he says it's kind of fun because it's? Oh, do you remember the other day I played for you a new to us K. Strauss was from years and years ago where he was on a different TV station. Trying to talk about his yo-yo therapy for children. And
yes.
I told you I just really liked the end. I thought there was something funny at the end. That's the problem. I make these things, but I can't get your reaction from them because we're already in the show by the time we talk again. But here's why I loved this. I'm going to start this near the end.
Oh.
Oh, you're right?
Yeah. Okay, let's see.
How long have you been practicing yo-yo?
Since
you were younger?
When did Schubert Dip come out?
Schubert Dip? An EMF joke in the 2000s. I think that's just wonderful.
Wait, the album Schubert Dip by EMF?
Yeah,
as in
that's what
you're
he was
unbelievable?
Saying. He's trying to figure out when he started yo-yoing. He says, I don't know, when did Schubert Dip come out?
I didn't even know. I thought that was just like a regional tobacco product.
He's referencing
the EMF record,
yes.
Schubert Dip.
And I don't know why know that or remember it, but that's why.
Well, you're unbelievable, Andrew.
So good. All right, listen.
You've got your hands full of yo-yos right now. You
yes.
got, what, 4 yo-yos per hand, right?
Right. And what I do is, it's called the Blue Flying Angel.
Okay.
You know, what we do, or I'll do is, the kids, I'll get into the room and the kids will be running around and
right.
they'll be all excited. And so I try to start things off on their level and try to hook them with something like a rap.
Okay.
So it's, and it's kind of clever because it includes me.
Okay.
And it goes, hey, they're up in the sky. It's the K. Strauss, the yo-yo guy. And then I do the boo da da ba 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 da 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 ski da 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 ba ba do 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 yo yo yo. You know, and I get them going. And I get them into it.
Okay.
And so when once I do that, they are ready to learn.
Never.
That guy is a national treasure.
Mark Proch is his name. I don't know if I'm butchering
yeah.
his last name, but Proksch. Yeah.
And he's on the TV version of What We Do in the Shadows.
Yes,
and,
which I've just Genevieve watched a long time ago and highly recommended, and I've been kind of dipping into that a little bit. I do recommend it. His character especially is just brilliant. Just
you said he's
brilliant.
Like he is a energy sucking vampire?
Yeah, so he's in the TV show and I assume the movie too. It's like it's about real vampires who are living in not Long Island. What's the other borough?
Staten Island?
Staten Island, yeah. And so they're living in the real world, but they really are vampires. And he lives with them. He is also a vampire, but he is some sort of modern vampire who doesn't have to follow any of the usual vampire rules, but he's just a guy who's an energy vampire. He just sucks energy out of people. He works in this, like, you know, cubicle farm where he just goes around making small talk with his colleagues and just being exhausting. Like asking people if they're putting too much dressing on their salads.
Mm-hmm. I hate when people do that. Mm-hmm. All right. I guess that's the end of the show today. I have had a fun time today. I don't know if it was interesting to the listeners or you, but I feel like I was able to really unburden myself, Andrew, of a lot of stories.
So, I had a really good time. I felt a little weird about yesterday's show. I felt like it was a Monday. I was groggy. I woke up halfway through the show, which is never good. So I feel like today was a make good. So for all the listeners who felt like that, they got gypped out of some good TBTL magic yesterday.
Today's show was at 150%, and yesterday's show is at 50%. But if you add them together, each show is at 100%.
That's right. So stop complaining.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We're going to be back here tomorrow. I'd say tomorrow probably will be 50% again, but then Thursday will be 175.
Okay.
So if you put those together, that's more than 100%.
Yeah.
So
donate now.
Remember when we were trying to do math in Minnesota?
No, I think I blocked it out.
I don't usually have those kinds of meetings.
Yeah.
I don't have those kind of ruminations, but we were meeting with one of our colleagues. We're going over some numbers for the show from the TBTL-a-thon, and there was like a very easily assessed amount of income from a certain thing. And I'll just speak for myself. I could not for the life of me do the math. I was just sitting there staring at it, and I took like three guesses and they were all wrong. And this was a number that was not that hard to figure out.
Well, that's one thing that I will say, that sometimes I feel like this is so damn defensive. But sometimes I do think that people who are maybe listening to the radio or something, and you hear somebody say something that is so obviously wrong or so obviously within their grasp, but they kind of can't quite get there, like Nicole Kidman's name or something like that. There is pressure. Your brain is kind of doing a lot of things. And like, if you were alone in your apartment and you looked at whatever those two numbers are, I guarantee you would have gotten it like that. But when you're in a room full of people and you're saying out loud, suddenly your heart starts beating faster, your brain starts spinning, and something just happens where you're not operating at full capacity.
Yeah. What music are we hearing here?
Oh, this is Don't Cry For Me, Argentina. Nothing new, but nothing impressed me at all. I'm going to play it 20 times in a row, so people will really
Good
get
stuff.
Their money's worth.
Now, remind me, why are we going out with this? Did we talk
this
about
is,
Argentina?
This is the song that Lisa put on the jukebox 20 times in a row.
Yes, of course.
That says that nobody should ever Got put it. This on a public playlist.
Got it. Okay, good. Let's keep trolling the listeners. as is our want. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
And as for fortune, and as for fame, I never invited them in. Though it seemed to the world they were all I desired, they are illusions, they're not the solutions they promised to be. The answer was here all the time. I love you and hope you love me. Don't cry for me, Argentina.
Power out.